જમનથીરા બનછારી જયા કુંજ બિહારે. જયા જમનથીરા બનછારી જયા કુંજ બિહારે. જયા રાધા માધવા જયા કુંજ બિહારે. જયા કુંજ બિહારે. જયા રાધા માધવા જયા કુંજ બિહારે. જયા ગોપીજન ભલાભા જયા ગિરિભર ધારે. જયા ગિરિભર ધારે. જયા ગોપીજન ભલાભા જયા ગિરિભર ધારે. જયા ગિરિભર ધારે. જશોદનંદન જયા બ્રજ જન રંજન. જયા જશોદનંદન જયા બ્રજ જન રંજન. જમુના તીરા બનછારી જયા કુંજ બિહારે. જયા જમુના તીરા બનછારી જયા કુંજ બિહારે. રાધા માધવા જયા કુંજ બિહારે. જયા રાધા માધવા જયા કુંજ બિહારે. જયા કુંજ બિહારે. રાધા માધવા જયા કુંજ બિહારે. જયા કુંજ બિહારે.
જય ઓમ વિષ્ણુપાદ પરમહંસ પરિવ્રાજ આચાર્ય અશ્તુતર શત શ્રીમાધી સેવાઈંગ ગ્રેસ એસી ભક્તિ વેદાંત સ્વામી શિલ પ્રભુપાદ કી અનંત કોટિ વૈષ્ણવ વૃંદ કી ઇસ્કોન ફાઉન્ડર આચાર્ય શિલ પ્રભુપાદ કી ગ્રંથર શ્રીમદ ભાગવતં કી નિતાય ગૌર પ્રેમાનંદી ઓ ગ્લોરિસ ટુ ધ એસેમ્બલ્ડ ડિવોટીસ. Oh glories to the assembled devotees. Oh glories to the assembled devotees. Oh glories to Shishi Guru and Shri Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Shrimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 15, Text 24, entitled Instructions for Civilized Human Beings. Kripaja Bhutajam Dukham Daivan Jahiyat Samadhina Atma Jan Yoga Biryena Nidran Sattva Nishevaya Kripaya Bhuta Jam Dukham Daivan Jahiyat Samadhina Atma Jan Yoga Biryena Nidran Sattva Nishevaya Kripaya Bhutajam Dukham Daivan Jahiyat Samadhina Atma Jan Yoga Biryena Nidran Sattva Nishevaya. Please chant. Nidran Sattva Nisevaya Kripaya Bhutajam Dukham Daivan Jahiyat Samadhina Atmajan Yoga Biryena Nidran Sattva Nisevaya Kripaya. By being merciful to all other living entities. Bhutajam, because of other living entities. Dukham, suffering. Daivam, suffering imposed by providence. Jahiyat, one should give up. Samadhina, by trance or meditation. Atmajam, suffering due to the body and mind. Yoga Biryena, by practicing Hatha Yoga. Pranayama, or so forth. And so forth. Nidram, sleeping. Sattva Nisevaya, by developing Brahminical qualifications or the mode of goodness. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. By good behavior and freedom from envy, one should counteract sufferings due to other living entities. By meditation in trance, one should counteract sufferings due to providence. And by practicing Hatha Yoga, Pranayama, and so forth, one should counteract sufferings due to the body and mind. Similarly, by developing the mode of goodness, especially in regard to eating, one should conquer sleep. Purport. By practice, one should avoid eating in such a way that other living entities will be disturbed and suffer. Since I suffer when pinched or killed by others, I should not attempt to pinch or kill any other living entity. People do not know that because of killing innocent animals, they themselves will have to suffer severe reactions from material nature. Any country where people indulge in unnecessary killing of animals will have to suffer from wars and pestilence imposed by material nature. Comparing one's own suffering to the sufferings of others, therefore, one should be kind to all living entities. One cannot avoid the suffering inflicted by providence, and therefore, when sufferings come, one should fully absorb oneself in chanting the Hare Krishna Mantra. One can avoid sufferings from the body and mind by practicing mystic Hatha Yoga. Kripaya Bhuttayam Dukham Daivan Jahyat Samadina Admajan Yoga Viryena Nidran Sattva Nisevaya. By good behavior and freedom from envy, one should counteract sufferings due to other living entities. By meditation in trance, one should counteract sufferings due to providence. And by practicing Hatha Yoga, Pranayama, and so forth, one should counteract sufferings due to the body and mind. Similarly, by developing the mode of goodness, especially in regard to eating, one should conquer sleep. Om Agyana Timirandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Ummilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurube Namaha. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Shimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Iti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashatya Deshatarine Bancha Kalpa Tarubhyasya Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patidanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. These are the instructions for civilized men, and we see that this is the principles of the great Vedic civilization. It was called the Aryan civilization. And it was explained that this was a great civilization in which the whole principles that will structure the civilization was the progressive elevation of consciousness. And so it was known that a person who was part of this Aryan civilization was a person who knows, Prabhupada's specific words, who knows the value of life and who knows the purpose of life. And the purpose of life is self-realization. So the whole civilization was to facilitate this to every member of society, regardless of what position or regardless of what status or whatever type of work, this member of the society had, the whole principle was to elevate the consciousness. So it was a very progressive society. And we're hearing Narada Muni's instructions for what are the principles that rule this civilization, civilize man in Vedic culture. And this particular part, the series of verses that are dealing with we'll say the predicament of the conditioned souls, or better to say not the predicament, but the actual position of being a conditioned soul, a living entity in this material world, and how the things that factually we have to deal with just by being in a body. And it is explained that as soon as a living entity comes in contact with material nature, then some transformation happens in terms of consciousness. So originally, the living entity is a pure entity that is the constitution of the living entity is Sachit Ananda, and is full of eternity, full of knowledge, and full of bliss. And the essence of the living entity is based on this loving relationship with the personality of Godhead. Is the nature of the living entity. Is this eternal loving connection with the personality of Godhead. So that is the essence of the living. That is the essence that we have. You know, loving relationship with Krishna. And this natural essence, it becomes manifested in loving service. So therefore, it is explained that the essence of the living entity is loving service to Krishna. And this this nature, spiritual nature of the living entity, when it comes contact with material nature, the scriptures give the example that it happens like when you have pure milk and you add some element like a tamarind or citric acid or lemon, and then the milk becomes transformed into something else, you know, into a yogurt or curd. So it becomes transformed. So similarly, it is explained, Krishna explains this in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that when the living entity comes in touch with material nature, then the love that is the natural love for Krishna becomes transformed into lust. And Krishna describes to Arjuna that this lust is the greatest enemy of the living entity. And lust gives entrance to all these different, like Krishna Archana was mentioning in her class about these plunders or talks, not talk, talks, talks. That's how you say talk, thoughts. These bad people, you know, that comes to plunder all your good qualities. So But the first one, the chief one, according to the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the greatest enemy of the living entity, is lust. And we see how the succession, these successions of qualities comes. It's like, you know, the dominoes start to fold as one gives entrance to lust. Because lust, Krishna explained that there are three modes of nature, and then in general, when the living entity comes into contact with material nature, the mode of passion is the one that generates lust. And lust, once is there, then what it will do, it will degrade into the mode of ignorance. And then those two modes, passion and ignorance, are the one that completely sends the living entity completely down into material existence. So from lust, then wrath, anger comes, right? We know that from the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And then from anger, then it becomes you become bewildered. And you lose sense, your mind becomes bewildered, your intelligence becomes bewildered, and then what happens? Delusion comes. One is completely, you forget about your who you are and contact with yourself, and basically you start to see what is a delusion is that you don't see things as they really are. Is not, you seeing something that is not, and that is called Maya. Then you're completely engulfed by a false identification, false ego. And that's what keeps the living entity completely entrapped and shackled to the material world. So a progressive system have to deal with those qualities that entangles the living entity. They're called thoughts or plunders or poisons, you know, that you have to counteract. You have to have some antidote for these poisonous substances. And this civilized or progressive societies of the past, the Vedic culture, they would take into account that the living entity in this material world condition, in this material world, have those propensities. That's the nature of the place. That is, that, you know, that you have to, you automatically, when you come in contact with material nature, you become engulfed by this misconception, this delusion. So you have to have a system that elevates consciousness and awakens the living entity to their real identity. And this is this Vedic culture. This is this, that Vedic culture means, Aryan culture means civilized. And the understanding is that if it's not with these principles, it's uncivilized. It's not really a civilized society. And so What are all these? What is all these poisonous elements that are that one must counteract? They are, and you know, the whole list has been given in the last few verses, how you counteract these things. So we have lusty desires, anger, greed, fear, lamentation, illusion, fright, unnecessary talks on material subjects, violence, the four miseries of material existence, and the three material qualities. So the objective of human life in a civilized society is that one has to overcome these things. One has to be able to conquer them. Krishna says the same thing, that basically he summed all these things into one, into lust. And he say, you can conquer this, you can conquer lust. And Krishna's recommendation is you start by conquering, by regulating the senses. And he also explains that actually regulating the senses is specifically say, let me look here in the power. He says, he gave you information, he gave us information, where is lust situated? And we have to address, you know, each one of these places, strategic places that lust have, you know, taken, and we have to sort of attack and conquer right there. And he says that lust is... you have the sitting place of lust is in the senses, in the mind, and the intelligence. So basically, it's taking your whole. So, you know, we have the body, which is made of the five gross elements, but the body functions through the senses. The body way of interacting with the material world is through the senses. And then there's the subtle body, which is mind and intelligence and ego. The mind and the intelligence is also taken by lust. So Krishna explains that in the beginning, this is just in the beginning, you curb. Is specifically you curb this great sinful of sin, lust, by regulating the senses. And the slave is destroyer of knowledge and self-realization. So in the beginning, we regulate the senses. So that's how we attacked that particular strategic sitting place of lust, regulating the senses. So how we regulate the senses? Well, it is explained that you first start with the tongue. And that's why some very important instruction is given in terms of eating. So we heard in previous classes about the importance of eating only foods that have been offered in sacrifice to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to take prasadam. And specifically the tongue have these two functions, the tasting and to vibrate. So the tasting very clear, you know, we have to eat Krishna prasadam. And in terms of the vibration, then you use the tongue to glorify Krishna. So then it comes, before getting to that, the engagement of the senses in the service of Krishna. So you start with that. Well, that's what the recommendation. We start with using the senses, regulating the senses. Another way that we give in terms of regulations is on eating, on sleeping, on... So there's a whole life, how you say, a lifestyle that is recommended to control the senses. But of all the senses, the tongue is the first one that you attack. And then that helps control, you know, the rest. In terms of the mind, it is explained that meditation, the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, today's verse explains that this Daivan Jahiyat Samadhina, that, well, by meditation, and specifically Prabhupada explains by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, then that's why we, you know, attack lust within the mind and purify it. Basically, we have to purify our mind from that propensity. And that's through the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and meditation. And intelligence is by fully understanding the scriptures, by, you know, studying and hearing constantly the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita, books like this, then our intelligence becomes purified and strengthening. So this is a program that we have to deal with this great enemy. And this is a focus that has been given in this series of verses, because Narada Muni explains that we have to come to the position of be satisfied. A civilized person is a person that is satisfied in the self, that the mind is not agitated, that if one is not satisfied and is one pursuing, if one is not satisfied in the self, the term in the Bhagavad Gita is sthita pragya, that one has internal satisfaction, one finds satisfaction within the self, then one's trying to look for satisfaction through the senses interacting with material nature. So that's basically this element of loss. In previous verses in this area, in this particular chapter, it is described greed towards sense gratification, which is basically the same thing as lust. So if we're not satisfied, then you're trying to look for satisfaction in something else, in material nature. And that forces one into degradation. That's what Narada Muni is explaining. So it is important that we have to address these things and conquer these things. One have to become fully satisfied, because I thought there was, I like this verse so much, that Srila Narada Muni explains that he say, yeah, it's basically a position of happiness, of being fully satisfied and happy with one's position. And he say, one who is content and satisfied, who links his activities with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, residing in everyone's heart, enjoys transcendental happiness without endeavoring for his livelihood. So this position of happiness in connection with the Supreme Personality of God. That's the aim of life. That's the recipe for being peaceful and happy. And he says, Narada Muni says, and this I like very much, especially the simile, for a person who has suitable shoes on his feet, I always get confused what simile, what analogy was, you know. So, it's beautiful. For a person who has suitable shoes on his feet, there is no danger even when he walks on pebbles and thorns. For him, everything is auspicious. Similarly, it's a simile, no? Similarly, for one who is always self-satisfied, there is no distress. Indeed, he feels happiness everywhere. What does this mean? That the world doesn't change. This place is not a place that is a happy place, that is a comfortable place. It's a place that is built to be miserable. Dukkhalajan ashashvatam is not compatible with the nature of the soul, so it's always going to be incompatible. Meaning that if something is not incompatible to you, you cannot be comfortable and settled and happy. There is discomfort and there is miseries that are built into the construction of this material world. So there is going to be tribulations. There is going to be difficulties. But if one is protected, if one's consciousness is protected by this satisfaction in one's loving relationship with Krishna, then it's like you have a really nice set of shoes, and it doesn't matter what type of path you're walking, even if that path is filled with pebbles and thorns, it doesn't hurt your feet because they're protected by these very, you know, solid shoes. So similarly, we're protected. If we are in the position of loving service to Krishna, we'll be protected to any type of miserable condition that is there. And thus, today's verse deals with that. Today's verse is basically how you counteract the three miseries of life. The three miseries of life are, you know, Adi Bhautika, Adi Daivika, and Adi Atmika. So, Adi Atmika is miseries that are produced. Adi Bhautika is miseries that are produced by other living entities. So how you counteract that? Well, you do this. You cultivate or you become free from envy, and your behavior is good. So right here we're dealing with counteracting, you know, sufferings due to other living entities, suffering due to providence, but that, you know, that's the same. There's Adi Daivika, suffering due to just material nature. And the sufferings due to our own body and mind. So these miseries that are just part of the world become completely shielded. You become completely shielded from these miseries by being situated in your constitutional position. So the goal of a civilized society is to bring every single member of society to this position. And that is that's a progressive society. So right here, we see that there's a particular recommendation of what kind of qualities, what kind of counteracting thing you can do to conquer these different bad qualities, so that leads one to so much suffering. And so we're going to hear more about it in the next verses. She gets better and better. But the theme is that here's a presentation of a social structure that elevates the consciousness of living entities. So remember that when this lust comes from contact with the mode of passion and degrades into the mode of ignorance, into anger and delusion. So a progressive society then take this loss, which is naturally happens within every conditioned soul, and start to move them upwards to the mode of goodness. So the first stages of this civilized, of, you know, as a civilized structure, is that the living entity start to come to the mode of goodness. And in the mode of goodness, you're able to absorb the transcendental knowledge, and then being able to apply it like that. So so this is very important instructions. You know, again, the verse, I read it again, it says, by good behavior and freedom from envy, one should counteract sufferings due to other living entities. By meditation, one should counteract sufferings due to providence. And by practicing Hatha Yoga, Pranayama, and so forth, one should counteract sufferings due to the body and mind. Similarly, by developing moral goodness, the moral goodness, especially in regard to eating, one should conquer sleep. When we talk of sleep, it's just illusion. It's a mode of ignorance. So when we come awakened in the mode of goodness to transcendental knowledge. So very important instructions. And in terms of how the application that our founder Acharya has given us to how to achieve this same elevation within, you know, a social structure that is completely opposed to self-realization, you know, which is a modern Kali Yuga, you know, a structure, a social structure, then Prabhupada give us the regulations of devotional service, which is the four regulated principles. And the activities of devotional service, the regulations of devotional service that basically can be sort of categorized in these two principles or these two categories, deity worship and Sankirtan Jagya. So by these activities and the regulations that are within these activities, deity worship and Sankirtan Jagya and the four regulated principles, we are automatically within the program that we're given, we consistently been going at these enemies, you know, lost, specifically as per Krishna, lost, we're, you know, conquering these enemies. So, that's more or less what I have to say. Any comment or questions, please? Jai Baladev Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna, thank you for your class. This is not my question, but I want to know where's that shoe analogy? The shoe analogy?
It's in, what's this, the it's in this chapter. It's,
wait, verse and before, so I can write that down. I could get after class if you want.
I tell you. Are you sad? Just read it. Oh, yeah. 15:17. 7:15:17. It's really nice, no?
Yeah, I like that analogy. Thank you. You were mentioning at the beginning of your class, these are the instructions for civilized man. And so this reminded me of a conversation I had with the devotee recently ago. He said he started a business and last year he was flourishing with a lot of money, and this year he's completely broke. And the reason is, one of the reasons is that he was surprised that his friend, since he known in high school, he was co-partners with her, and long story short, she embezzled money from him, and that's one of the reasons. And he was kind of, you know, taken aback by that. And so one thing I appreciate, we were discussing in this conversation, is that I mentioned to him that you never hear, like a circus, they never teach circus or wild animals, I'm going to teach you how to be a wild animal. They teach them how to be trained animals in a circus. So when we're listening to these teachings, you were mentioning that these are the instructions for civilized human beings. We never see Lord Chaitanya tell people, I'm going to teach you how to, you know, slander someone's character or gossip or get revenge. He doesn't have to teach us these things because under the most material nature. So I mentioned to this devotee, I'm like, why are you surprised by this? We should be surprised, you know, when somebody acts with integrity, not only with other people, we should also be surprised if we sometimes act with, you know, good character and integrity, because if devotees are struggling with this. So my question is, basically, is that I mentioned to him a similar story where this one other devotee had, you know, was working with some other devotees, and they basically embezzled money from him as well, even devotees. So we hear in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that one should always wear this verse, Urva Bahu Kari Kohan Shunya Sarvalok Namasusha Gansi Pada Kanta Eshlok. One should always wear this verse of humility on one's neck, including forgiveness. So the question is basically, like, when we go into a relationship, not just with karmis, but especially with devotees, it's sometimes difficult. We, like, depend on, you know, devotees to be the perfect people. And then when they're not the perfect people, we're surprised by it. I'm like, if, you know, devotees are struggling with bad qualities, you know, what to speak of karmis? So what should we do in that situation? Because if some trust is not there, it's kind of hard to advance in Krishna consciousness. So what's the solution that we should more worry about us getting serious about Krishna consciousness, not depending on whether somebody else is serious about the Krishna consciousness? So what's the situation, you know, what's the proper mentality we should have with dealing with, especially devotees, that, of course, if devotees are struggling with bad qualities, you know, should we get more serious about our Krishna consciousness and stop worrying about whether or not others are serious? So can you elaborate on that point a little bit?
I would say just what this verse says, Kripaya Bhutayam Dukham, that translation is by good behavior and freedom from envy. One should counteract sufferings due to other living entities. So, you know, we have to cultivate ourselves just by good behavior, by your, you know, achar, and check at envy. So, you know, we look inside, and just by doing the right thing, you know, by acting properly towards others, you know, there's a common say, you treat others how you like to them to would like from them to treat you, something like that. No? You treat others the same way you would like to be treated. So you cultivate proper Vaishnava behavior. That's what we should try to do. And Vaishnava behavior is, you know, you serve. You know, you become a well-wisher, that type of thing. So, you know, great examples are there, Haridas Thakur, etc., etc. You know, you can remember so many. So I would say that we can meditate on that by good behavior and freedom from envy. You can counteract not only, you know, this or that, you know, any, you know, from non-devotees, from other living entities. You know, we have the case of Sanatana Goswami, that even the mosquitoes left the place, you know, a mosquito infected place in Govardhan, you know, left. Up to now, there's no mosquitoes in that place. Because they left, you know, because Sanatana Goswami was doing his bhajan there. So, it's explained like that. Any other question? Jitendra Prabhu?
Thank you. I remember Bhakti Siddhanta said the whole problem is uncontrolled senses. And then one of our, we even have a pamphlet. I'm trying to think who wrote it, but the regulative principles of freedom.
Yeah.
And then you were talking about do unto others as you would have them do unto you. I was told that was called a golden rule.
Golden rule.
But in Kali Yuga, it's he who has the gold rule. Gold rules. He who has the gold rules. So that's a demoniac twist to that saying. But that just came to mind, Prabhu.
That's nice. Thank you, Prabhu. Today, also, I forgot to mention, is the appearance day of Srila Ramanujacharya. And maybe I should spend 5 minutes just reading some of his glories. He's such an amazing acharya. The head acharya in the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, the disciplic succession that comes from Lakshmi Devi. So, just in quick, here's some events. Yesterday we heard some of the narrations from His Holiness Ranad Maharaj about the glories of Ramanujacharya, which was really inspiring. Well, here's some events in the life of Sri Ramanuja. Within 16 years of age, he had mastered all the Vedas and Shastras. At the age 17, he married Raksha Kambal, Tanjamal in Tamil. Tanjamal in Tamil, so the name. So he married Ilaya Perumai, was placed under the Advaitic sannyas called Yadava Prakash. So his name as a child was Ilaya Perumal, and he studied under this impersonalist, you know, famous sannyasi called Yadava Prakash at Tirupur Kutsi for training in Advaita Purva Paksha Shastra of Vedanta. Once during this period, Alavandar, who is also Ramanuja, who desired nominating Ilaya Perumal. Okay, Alavandar is Yamunacharya. He's trying to clarify this. Who desired nominating Ilaya Perumal to succeed himself, visited Tirupur Kutsi, met with him, but had no opportunity to speak to him and had to return to Sri Rangam. Very many occasions arose when the Shaivite guru clashed with Ilaya Perumal, when the guru misinterpret Vedantic statements. Ilaya Perumal fearlessly pointed out the errors in the guru's interpretation and correct him. This enraged the guru, fearing that one day Ilaya Perumal would demolish Advaita philosophy. He plotted to kill Ilaya Perumal by drowning him in the Ganga while on a pilgrimage tour of the country with his disciples. Learning of the designs through one Govinda, Govinda was his cousin, another disciple who was also related to him, Ilaya Perumal slipped into the forest at the dead of night. Miraculously, an aged hunter couple appeared and guided him. As Ilaya Perumal, who was in trance, opened his eyes, he found himself in the outskirts of Kanchipuram, and the couple had disappeared. He realized that it was Lord Bharadwaj and Perudundi Tajar who has come in the guise of the Hunter people. Bharadaraj is a beautiful deity in Kanchipuram. Beautiful deity. And Perundevi Tajar is Lakshmi Devi. So they came in the guise of the hunter couple and saved him. He stayed in Kanchi for a while to assist Tiru Kanchi Nambi in his daily chores of service to Lord Bharadwaj. This Tiruk Kanchi Nambi was a great devotee. He's also once known as Kanchipuram. News came to Alavandar was very sick and he desired to meet with Ilaya Perumal. Just as Tiruk Kanchi Nambi and Alavandar arrived, they saw the funeral procession of Alavandar. During the last rites, they noticed that three fingers of Alavandar remained folded, signifying three of his unfulfilled wishes, as Ilaya Perumal swore. So this was a very wonderful part of the pastime. Yamunacharya was the main acharya of the Sri Sampradaya. When he passed, he wanted to bring Ramanujacharya to be nominated as the successor. And when the Ramanujacharya arrived with Kanchipuram, the hand of Yamunacharya was closed in three fingers. It was like whole like that. So Ramanujacharya explained that this was the three wishes that was unfulfilled. So as he said the wishes one by one, then the fingers of the dead body of Yamunacharya just move and release, you know, the closed fingers. So he says the first one, that he will write a commentary on Vedavyas Brahma Sutra. Boom, one finger comes out. That second, that he will perpetuate the memory of Vyas and Parashara, and so meaning that he will name the disciples, he will name some disciples with the name of Parashara and Vyasa. Then second one like that. And that he will strive, the third one, he will strive to propagate Vashista Dvaita on the lines of the 4,000 holy collects of the Alvars. And then the third finger, you know, stretch out to a normal position. The fingers unfold one by one automatically and stretch out to normal position, signifying that these were his last wishes. Since he could not meet with Alavandar, he returned to Kanchi without even going into the temple of Sri Rangam. I read few more and then we finish. Tirukachi Nambi obtained from Lord Bharadwaj the famous six words and passed them into Ilajalvar, Ramanujacharya. These six words provide the guidelines for Ilajalvar to follow. They were, so these are important. See, these are Kanchipurnam was Ramanujacharya first, you know, a spiritual master into the Vaishnava, you know, Sampradaya. So Kanchipurnam have this amazing, he was such a wonderful pure devotee that Lord Bharadwaj, the deity, would constantly talk with him. So it was known that he had conversations with the deity. And, you know, the deity would instruct and say things that needed to like that. So Lord Bharadwaj gave Kanchipurnam these six guidelines. And then Kanchipurnam passed it to Ramanujacharya. And the first one is that Lord Narayan is the Paramatma. Two, that the individual souls were different from Paramatma. Three, that prapatti is a means to obtain salvation. I'm not sure what prapatti is. I have to look on that. Four, that the last remembrance of the Lord on the part of the departing soul was not necessary. The last remembrance of the Lord. Okay. Five, that moksha can be obtained only on laying off the mortal coils, videha mukti. And six, that Ilaya Perumal should take refuge at the feet of Periya Nambi. Accordingly, he met with Periya Nambi in Madurantakam, where under the shade of a bakula tree, Periya Nambi performed pancha samskara to him. And he was initiated into esoteric and dwaya mantra at Madurantakam, the place that came to be known as Dwayam Vailambya Tirupati. So this was, I can't remember the name of this. I mean, here is the actual name of this sage that he took initiation. He went to Tirupati, and that's where he took initiation. I think, I can't remember. I have to look at another translation. And from there, both returned to Sri Rangan, and eventually Ramanujacharya became the top acharya, or the head acharya of the whole Sri Sampradaya in Sri Rangan. Anyway, I stop here. There's more, tons of nectar from the past tense of Srila Ramanujacharya, and Srila Ramanujacharya's disciples were like the ultimate amazing, you know, followers. It's the past tense is so, they're so sweet, is very, very incredible, amazing. So we stop here. Srila Ramanujacharya ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Premanandi, Hari Hari Bol.